Welcome to the Sherritt International Corporation Fourth Quarter 2016 Results Release Conference Call and Webcast. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Friday, February 17, 2017, at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Ms. Flora Wood, Director, Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Angelique. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for dialing in today. It's released that the first quantum Q&A's ended, so you can all join us. With me in the room are David Pathy, President and CEO, Steve Wood, COO, and Andrew Snowden, CFO. Before David opens the call, I'd like to remind you that we will be using forward-looking statements today. These apply both during our remarks on the call and to the Q&A discussion afterwards. You'll see our forward-looking statement on slide two. And with that, I'll turn over to David Pathy.
All right. Thank you, Flora, and good morning, everyone, from me as well. Before we get started here, I want to take a moment and introduce you to Andrew Snowden. I'm very pleased to have Andrew on the call this morning as our new Chief Financial Officer. As many of you probably already know, Andrew took over officially as our new CFO at the first of this year. Andrew's been with Sherritt for a few years and progressed through a number of progressively senior finance positions, and I'm delighted to have him in this role now in 6 weeks in or whatever he is here. Before joining Sherritt, Andrew was with Ernst & Young, practicing both in Canada and internationally. And when you hear Andrew speak in a few minutes, it'll be readily apparent that he hasn't spent all of his time in Canada. Before we jump into the regular presentation here and then get to your questions, I also just want to say a quick word about Dean Chambers. Dean obviously stepped down as our Chief Financial Officer at the end of last year. Dean continues with us here for a period of time, both ensuring a smooth transition to Andrew and carrying on our discussions with our Embattapi partners that we've been talking about for the last few quarters. Dean first joined Sherritt in June of 2007 upon the closing of the acquisition of Dynatech, and Dean was the CFO of Dynatech at the time. In the time since then, Dean has made measurable contributions to Sherritt over the years, and I must say he's been a great friend to me personally. I wanted to thank him both on behalf of the company and myself for all that he's done in the last 10 years and his support of me, and wish him well. Dean will be here for a little while yet as we continue to work through discussions with the Embattapi, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes, but I did want to acknowledge Dean's contribution here over the years as the Q3 call would have been his last as Chief Financial Officer. So getting to the Q4 presentation, we will do what we normally do here. I'm going to make a few high-level comments on the quarter and the year 2016, and then I'll ask Steve to highlight a few operational matters and metrics for you, and then you'll hear from Andrew on some financial highlights, and we'll come back and take your questions. To jump into it, I'm going to start on page 3 of the presentation for those of you following along by phone or on the Internet. Here it kind of highlights what we did over the course of the year. 2016 as a whole was another difficult year in commodity markets. Those of you who followed us will recall 2015 was a particularly bad year from a nickel perspective. I think it was the worst performing metal in the LME in 2015. And our realized price in 2016 was probably close to 20% lower in 2016 than it was in 2015. We were, I think, a full dollar lower on the realized price. We did see some uptick in momentum at the end, and I'll look at that in a slide or two's time. In that obviously tight commodity pricing market and tight cash flow environment, where there was a lot of discipline around our capital spending, and the focus was really on proactive balance sheet management. You saw that in the case of the debt repayment and the repurchasing of some debenture debt. We extended the maturities on our three series of public debentures. And we saw the negotiated deferral with the Embattapi senior financiers of the three-year deferral and the principal repayments on the amortization schedule of that Embattapi project finance. We also held to the discipline of no cash into Embattapi and no cash off our balance sheet to Embattapi while we addressed the 40 for 12 issues that we've spoken about many times. I'll give you a bit of an update as to where we are on that in a moment. We did, however, focus capital where we thought it made sense to spend it, and there were a couple of growth initiatives in capital, primarily in our Block 10 drilling, which got started in the fourth quarter, third and fourth quarter, as well as our acid plant construction at Moa, which we completed in October of this year on time and under budget and now have up and running, and we'll start to see the economic benefit of that in 2017 here. In both those cases, the investment decision made sense even in the cash environment that we're in. As you know, the Moa acid plant was funded in part by a financing facility from a Cuban financial entity, and the imperative on our drilling in Block 10 is driven by the upcoming expire of existing production sharing contracts late this year and in 2018. Flipping over to page four, I did want to touch a bit on nickel markets. I did mention briefly that it was an interesting year and that overall realized prices for the year were down 20%, but the price from the first of the year to where it finished the year was actually up almost 20%. So as you look at the graph there of the nickel price over the last couple of years, we do seem to have seen a bottom in the first half of 2016 and start to see some positive momentum in the nickel price. Been a lot of volatility late last year and early this year on the back of announcements out of Indonesia and the Philippines. Chinese New Year, which just ended last week, and also was a historically soft period in the nickel market, and we should start to get a better sense of where the market is going as we get past that. We have seen some recent strength in the last few weeks as we're creeping back up to that $5 mark, and we're hoping we'll see that continue as we get further into the year here. Overall, from a supply and demand perspective, I think CRU now, after a number of years of surpluses and significant surpluses in the earlier part of this decade that led to LME inventories running up quite significantly, we did have a modest deficit in 2016 of about 60,000 tons. We have seen LME nickel inventories plateau and start to come off a little bit in the second year. Watching that, see that trend continue will be, I think, an important indicator of further strengthening of the underlying nickel market supply and demand fundamentals. I also want to talk a little bit about cobalt, because cobalt has been getting much more attention in the last few weeks, and there's some interesting things happening in the cobalt market. Cobalt has really had a bit of a breakout here in the last few weeks after bottoming out in the middle of last year at something under $10 and being quite one of the poor performing base metals as well. We saw quite a significant uptick in the overall cobalt price in 2016. As nickel was in 2016 over 2015, our realized price for the year was below the 2015 average, but we finished the year much higher than we began it on a spot basis. And that momentum has continued into 2016. From kind of middle of last year, from a low of under $10, we're now not far, if not just through $20, and a fair bit of positive momentum and sentiment around cobalt generally. Driven in large part by expectations of future cobalt demand, and that demand driven primarily by battery demand and more specifically electric vehicles, Chinese government has prioritized higher quality battery development and has an ambitious development plan for chargers and expansion of electric vehicles in China, as well as in Europe and North America, is driving greater expectations of where cobalt demand is going to go in the future. The new Tesla Gigafactory alone, if one running at full capacity, could consume 7,000 tons of cobalt a year, and we're talking about a global market here that's only about 100,000 tons. So we're quite positive on the sentiment that we're seeing around that and think that we're well positioned to capitalize on that. Between Moa and Mbatabi on a 100% basis, you're looking at 6 or 7% of the world's cobalt there. In terms of what that means to us in actual dollars, ignoring Mbatabi on the basis that that's no cash in, no cash out for us until we have some greater clarity on the capital structure there. Every dollar U.S. move on the cobalt price is worth about $5 million to us, just our proportionate share of cash at the Moa joint venture, compared to about a $40 million for a dollar U.S. move in the nickel price. Over the page, on page five, you see the graph that we've shown you for the last few quarters, which is the Wood Mackenzie nickel industry cost curve. A couple of comments I'll just make to you here. You'll notice in particular at the 50th percentile at 369 is down significantly from where it was even in the third quarter. I think the third quarter it was around 440. That move is driven in part by a push to lower in costs by producers, but it's not all in one quarter. Towards the year end, Wood Mackenzie is able to true up some of their data with actuals over the course of the year, rather than the estimates they produce. And so it does illustrate that through the over the course of the year, the industry as a whole has been working hard to lower their C1 cash costs across the board. Interestingly as well, you see a bit of a flattening of the cost curve. So while the Q2, Q3 numbers came down in some ways significantly, the Q1 25th percentile number hasn't actually moved very much at all, to us indicating that the ability in those that already at the lower end of the cost curve to drive further cost savings out of their operations at this point is limited. Before I go to that, and let Steve come and speak to you a bit about operations, I did want to just touch on our current state of our negotiations with our Mbatha-Bee partners. You'll have all seen in the press release we did announce another short extension to our status as the waiver of our status as a defaulting shareholder under the shareholders agreement in connection with our non-funding of our share of cash calls to Mbatha-Bee. We are continuing to make progress with our partners. Our preference, our first choice, continues to be some rearranging of the capital structure to address the 40 for 12 issue that would lead us to an economic interest commensurate with our actual shareholding and funding obligation. This is the idea of moving from our 40 for 12 that we've talked about in the past to a 12 for 12. While we aren't keen on just being seen to continually kick the can down here, down the road with successive extensions to the waiver of the status, we wouldn't be doing that if we didn't feel we were making progress in the course of our discussions with our partners. I believe now there is momentum towards a solution and a desire on the part of all of our partners towards a solution. As we've talked about in the past, they are complicated issues. And it is a three-way negotiation, and as you start looking at ways of rearranging and changing the accounting structure, there are accounting implications that throws up for all the parties involved that are complex and need time to work through. We are keen to progress those negotiations and are happy to continue to engage them while we feel that construction progress is being made. And so that is what is behind the extension we've seen today. We do intend to try and keep this on a relatively short time frame here because to the extent we are building some momentum towards a solution, we are keen to sustain that. As we stand today, that is about as much as we have to tell you. Certainly as we have more news, we will be keen to share that with you as soon as we can and we'll be able to be much more fulsome in terms of what this looks like as going forward. But in terms of our priorities and what we're trying to achieve here, there's been no change in that. And I do believe we are making some constructive progress towards that with the conversations that we've been having with our partners. And with that, I am going to turn it over to Steve and let him take you through some operational highlights from the quarter and the year.
Thanks, Dave, and good morning to everybody on the line. I'll start off with slide 7 and specifically want to talk to safety first. As you've heard, we had a tragic accident at Moa in November. It was actually the worst in Moa's history. Four Moa Nickel employees died when a bridge that they were repairing collapsed. Several concurrent investigations have occurred following the accident, both by the authorities and by Moa Nickel itself. Many lessons have been learned to prevent recurrence, and we continue to use the temporary bypass bridge that we've built down there and then secondary access road to transport the mixed sulfides to the port. The impacts experienced in the fourth quarter while using these bypasses are expected to continue in 2017 and are built into our guidance. The permanent replacement to the bridge is under study at this time, and later in the year we'll be pulling together a plan. On the positive side, in the area of safety, at Mbatha-Bee we experienced over 15 million work hours without a lost time injury before recording its first and only lost time injury of the year. It's a major turnaround at Mbatha-Bee, and the folks there are to be congratulated. The fourth site also had a tremendous year with no lost time injuries, achieving a lost time injury frequency rate of zero, and oil, gas, and power operations were stable with only the one lost time injury in the first quarter. On slide 7, you'll see the operations and costs results. On the metals operations, usually we present the current quarter over the last quarter. But for the year end, we're showing full year production for Moa and Mbatovi over the prior year and against guidance. I'm going to focus more on cost than on production, as you saw our production results a couple of weeks ago. And I'm trying to address Moa Q4 costs in particular, which are higher than most of you expected at $3.80 per pound compared to analyst expectations in the $3 to $3.30 range. While we do have production impacts from the lower mixed sulfides shipments after Hurricane Matthew, the single biggest difference is the fertilizer credit in our NDCC, which is 55 cents lower than it was last year. We flagged the drop in price as a concern in Q3, as the price per ton had dropped by over $100 per ton from the previous quarter. We had similar realized prices in the fourth quarter, and they were compounded by lower volume sold because of the early onset of winter in Western Canada that left as much as 20% of the crops unharvested. Andrew will have some comments to share later on giving you our thinking on assumptions for 2017 and also explaining more about the expected NDCC benefit from the new acid plant. Mbatovi NDCC in Q4 was excellent at $3.10 per pound, and the guidance range for 2017 is similar. During the first quarter of this year, we have experienced some production challenges at Mbatovi and are rectifying. We are forecasting production of about 10,000 tons there in Q1. That said, the guidance remains unchanged at 48,000 to 52,000. Mbatovi CapEx is higher than you expected, but follows the mine plan sequence laid out in the technical report and a fleet upgrade. Now, turning to slide 8, I'm going to speak on oil and power. Our existing production sharing contracts are in the final stages and will revert to the Cubans in November for the Veradero PSC and March next year for the Umuri and Puerto Escondido PSC. The higher unit operating cost for these PSCs is attributable to the forecasted lower production compared to 2016. Last year, we spent $17 million Canadian on the drilling of Block 10 well, which is now being completed and tested. By the time that well is complete, it will have cost us in total approximately $20 million. We expect to announce test results next month. We will then be spending approximately another 2 months evaluating and updating the geological model. The CapEx you've seen in our guidance this year assumes that we drill and complete 2 wells, the second of which will be dependent on what we learn from the first well. We expect to be in a position by the latter half of this year to spell out our overall drilling program and financing for it. We are targeting to apply for and receive commerciality for Block 10 in 2018. In power, our unit operating costs were probably slightly higher than you expected in 2016, but lower in 2017 with the absence of gas turbine maintenance. My last slide is on a broad program that encompasses all of our operations, including our corporate office, and is something that I'm personally quite passionate about. The approach involves employees from across the business to identify opportunities and address them quickly and sustainably. The program is called Operational Excellence. It uses a lean manufacturing approach and several other tools. To date, over 200 employees have been involved in over 50 projects, and these numbers will continue to grow in 2017 as we identify more and more opportunities and we build our capability. The capability of the organization to continuously improve is growing significantly, and we expect improvements in safety, production costs, and just as importantly, in employee engagement as a result. So having said all of that, I'll now turn it over to our CFO, Andrew Snowden, who will take us through the numbers. Andrew?
Thank you, Steve, and good morning, everyone. My first time on the call today, and as Dave alluded to earlier, hopefully everyone listening can navigate their way through my English accent. Now year-end is almost behind us as well. Hopefully over the coming months I'll get a chance to meet and speak to many of you on the phone to continue our dialogue. Now, the next few slides, my focus is really going to be on cash So I'll talk through our cash cost drivers at our metals operations at Moa and Ambatovi. I'll spend some time on our cash movements through the 2016 year, and finally spend some time on our 2017 CapEx plans. So firstly, turning to slide 11, you'll see here there's two pie charts here that compare our key cash cost drivers at both Moa and Ambatovi. Now, this is more detail than we've provided in the past, and those that are interested in this level of detail will be able to see this within our supplemental information that we publish on a quarterly basis on our website. A few items I just want to highlight from this pie chart, and it's quite interesting the contrast between the key drivers at both Moa and Ambatovi. Firstly, as you'll see, our labor and contractor costs are much higher at Moa than Ambatovi, and at Moa form 23% of our total mining, processing, and refining costs. And this is really a function of Canadian labor at Fort Saskatchewan refinery being included in the Moa costs. Secondly, you'll notice maintenance forms 17% of the costs at Moa compared to 29% at Ambatovi. And really, as processes at Ambatovi become more reliable and mature over the coming years, we'll expect that portion of maintenance costs to slowly reduce and to be more consistent with what we experience at Moa. Thirdly, and an interesting point to highlight, actually, is our sulfur and sulfuric acid costs. And you'll see at Moa through the 2016 year, that's a significantly higher portion of our costs compared to Ambatovi, and falling 23% of our costs compared to 12% at Ambatovi. And that was really due to the fact that at Moa, through most of 2016, we did have to continue to purchase and import sulfuric acid to support the operations there. Now, as everyone I'm sure is aware, with our third acid plant being fully functioning at Moa, we'll no longer be required to purchase sulfuric acid, and so the cost profile of Moa there will reduce and become more in line with Ambatovi. Our expectation still remains that the acid plant and the benefits of the acid plant will continue to be approximately 50 cents saving on our NDCC basis, and we also approximate that we achieved a 10 cent saving of that through the 2015 Q4 period. The final point just to highlight here is on other variable costs. So you'll notice that Moa, other variable costs consist of around 9% of the total compared to Ambatovi, which is 32%. There is actually a lot of variability in this compared to the two operations, and in part that's because changes in inventory do fall under this category within both projects. And because our NDCC is on a sales volume rather than production volume basis, the timing of shipments sometimes would swing this particular category. The other couple of points just to highlight is there are some additional purchases that Ambatovi are required to make, which isn't part of the Moa cost profile. Firstly, limestone, which Ambatovi used their reagent to neutralize tailings for discharge, and whereas Moa used calcium carbonate, which they obtain on-site from natural sources. In addition, Ambatovi are required to purchase ammonia, whereas the Fort site produces its own ammonia for consumption. Just moving further down slide 11, one point I just wanted to pause on briefly was the 2017 NDCC guidance. You'll see some back to the, we are forecasting a much improved NDCC in 2017, down from 427 in 2016 to in the low mid $3 range in 2017. Obviously, in Q4, we demonstrated that we can achieve those levels, and if we maintain our production targets, we hope to be down at those levels through 2017. At Moa, our forecast NDCC for 2017 is roughly in line with 2016. So in 2016, we achieved an NDCC of $3.42, and the forecasting will be in that range for 2017. So despite the 50 cent saving that I indicated earlier as a result of the acid plant, higher maintenance costs and also higher forecast energy costs will offset the majority of that saving. And the forecast energy cost really just leads on to maybe some of the assumptions that we've used within our 2017 NDCC guidance. So in 2017, we're forecasting a WTI price in the range of $55 a barrel, which compares with actual costs of $45 in 2016. So that's a 20-25% increase on 2016 and obviously has an impact on our forecast NDCC range. In addition, just some key other assumptions that we've built into our guidance. One is on the cobalt price. So we've used a forecast price of $14 a pound. This is US dollars a pound. And as Dave mentioned earlier in the presentation, today the cobalt price is on a little bit of a rally, and we're currently in the $20 range. And so there's potentially some upside there from an NDCC perspective going forward. A couple of other assumptions we've used is sulfur excluding freight. We've assumed a $90 a ton price. And on the fertilizer side, which obviously forms a large part of our NDCC credits at MOA, we've assumed a sales price of approximately $450 a ton. Now just moving on to my next slide, slide 12. This is our cash waterfall over the past 12 months. You'll see here that our cash balance declined. This is cash equivalents and short-term investments. You'll see that balance declined by around $125 million during the year. One point I just wanted to highlight more by its absence from this cash waterfall than anything else is there is no cash usage that you'll see here for both MOA and Ambatovi. So for Ambatovi, of course, we've not been funding that operation through 2016, so Ambatovi's cash needs were funded by both Sumitomo and Corus. At MOA, they did not require any cash from its partners through 2016, and so based on their own cash balance and their ability to source Cuban financing for constructing the asset plant, they were able to meet their cash needs locally. Just working through the cash waterfall here, so the adjusted operating cash flow you'll see is $72 million. That then primarily comes from our oil, gas, power, and foresight operations. And that's been offset by approximately $85 million of corporate costs. About $85 million, for the largest part of that, relates to $60 million of interest paid on our debentures, and then approximately $25 million of corporate administrative costs. And that $85 million would be a good proxy to you going forward in terms of what our total cash costs or total corporate costs, will be going forward. The next item shows positive working capital changes of around $14 million, and that's primarily because of strong oil and gas receipts in the third quarter. Next, capital expenditure of around $40 million primarily would relate to oil and gas expenditure and as Dave and Steve talked to earlier around drilling activities on Block 10. Next is debt repayment of around $65 million. Now, one comment I wanted to make here briefly is that we did just renew our revolving facility in January of 2017 with a capacity of $90 million. That facility does decline by around $14 million in Q2 and then by approximately $3 million every quarter to an ending balance of $64 million in January of 2018. The interest rate on that facility increased by 100 basis points, and there was also an additional covenant that was added to that facility which requires us to maintain a minimum cash balance of $180 million, and that's cash equivalents, and short-term investments. You'll see further details on the revolver and the terms of that facility within Note 16 of our financial statements. The next item in the waterfall is fees paid on our debenture extension of around $14 million that you'll, I'm sure, recall from the last quarter. And then finally, other payments of $6.7 million, and that primarily relates to payments on our OBED reclamation costs that you'll likely recall we retained on sale of our coal business. Now, we do continue to have a provision for those remaining OBED costs of approximately $11 million that we feel comfortable will be sufficient to meet any future obligations relating to OBED reclamation. Now, finally, just moving on to slide 13, which details our 2017 CapEx guidance. Just a couple of points I wanted to highlight here. Firstly, the 2017 CapEx numbers you'll see on this slide do include Ambatovi at 40%. And right now, as you know, we don't fund any of that capital from Ambatovi, and if they do require cash funding, that will come from our partners. Secondly, if we do meet our production targets, and this is true of both Ambatovi and MOA, if we meet our production targets and commodity prices stay around the level they are today, then we wouldn't expect there'll be cash needs at either MOA or Ambatovi. Finally, the point I wanted to make, which is on oil and gas CapEx, which includes completion of the first Block 10 well and also the drilling of the second well. Our oil CapEx, though, will be paced according to success on the first well, and equally importantly, the pace of collections of our Cuban receivables. The collection of receivables is obviously an important priority for us, and we continue to engage at senior levels in Cuba on this ongoing issue. Now, that concludes my remarks this morning, and I look forward to the Q&A. Back to you, Dave.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Just before we get to your questions, I want to touch on our strategic priorities that you've seen from us for the last few quarters. In 2016, we were focusing on our core nickel business, looking to extend the life of our Cuban energy business, and paramount maintaining a strong balance sheet and reducing costs. You see on slide 15 there the progress we've made on those objectives over the course of the year. We had lower net direct cash costs in both of our nickel operations in 2016 over 2015. As we mentioned, we completed our acid plants in Moa on time and under budget. And a significant improvement in the Batavia net direct cash costs in the fourth quarter in particular, demonstrating what that asset is capable of. Our challenge now is, having demonstrated that we can put together a good quarter there, is now to string together a few good quarters. You've heard where we are on the drilling on the oil business, and we'll continue to update you on that over the course of this year as we look to extend our Cuban oil business. And on balance sheet, we have talked about the extensions to our debentures and the Batavia project financing. We maintain a strong and healthy cash position north of $300 million. That is where we stand as of Q4 and the end of 2016. You see a few key takeaways in terms of what's coming up for us in the near term here on page 16. And now, operator, we're happy to take any questions anybody may have.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll now take our first question from Greg Barnes of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Dave, Ambit and Batavia, in terms of the stabilization of the operation, it looks like the PAL section of the plant is doing okay, but the refinery is giving you some challenges. Is that where things stand now?
Not specifically, actually, Greg. Recently, we had a bit of an issue down there on with some sulfur and the sulfur melter, and we've got still the odd occasional rubber line pipe that you've heard us talk about in the past. We have changed a lot of that out over the last 12 or 18 months, but I think we're starting to see the efforts that have gone into asset reliability and getting our preventative maintenance regimes right down there, that we're making progress on that, and that's what enabled us to put up a good quarter in the fourth quarter. The refinery actually had a very strong quarter in the fourth quarter, and we did have stretches during the quarter. We were able to run the refinery at or a little above nameplate capacity. As we get more stability in PAL now, we are looking for opportunities to be able to push the refinery to run at full capacity or beyond for more extended periods of time. Because the reality with the ups and downs we've had in PAL over the last few years, we haven't really had enough and consistent mixed sulfide feed to really push the refinery to its limits and find out where the bottlenecks are at higher levels of production. So that's where the focus is now, but I'm not sure that we've had any particular problems in the refinery any greater than anywhere else.
Okay. And looking into 2017, well, first off, how's the plant operated in January and the first part of February?
We had a good month in January. We've had a couple of hiccups in February, and I think Steve mentioned that we're probably going to be around the 10,000-ton mark in the first quarter. That is probably a little below where we would be looking to be. For our guidance, it's not quite annual guidance divided by four across the quarters, depending on timing of maintenance schedules and end of campaign turnarounds on the autoclaves in PAL. So we're probably a little bit behind where we were hoping to be at this point in the year, but not such that we're concerned about hitting our guidance at this point in time.
Okay. Secondly, the $45 million U.S. in CapEx you've got guided from Embatavi, you're not going to fund that, is that correct, at this point?
Yeah, I mean, if the status quo of where we are at the moment, it's no cash in and no cash out for the foreseeable future on Embatavi. So the CapEx is dictated down there primarily by the fleet requirements of the mine as we move into a different mining area, and there's a bit of a ramp up in the fleet and some fleet renewal. But at this point in time, while we're not answering cash calls, it's not terribly material to us. If we do come to some arrangement going forward, that would involve us funding 12% of the capital going forward, our current forecasts are at Mbatovi are, if we can hit our production numbers, a nickel price around about where we are spot today, Mbatovi should be able to be cash flow neutral going forward, including funding its capex and the interest payments on the deferred debt.
At current.
So in terms of cash off the shared balance sheet, Moa should be able to be no worse than cash flow neutral, as should Mbatovi.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1. Ladies and gentlemen, we have no further questions at this time. You may continue.
Okay, well, thanks very much for dialing in, and anyone who wants to follow up with us, we're here and look forward to speaking with you soon on the first quarter results. Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines.